I'm at Mercury Intermedia today, and I'm talking with Rusty Mitchell, VP of Design, and Kelly Merrill, who is VP of Engineering for Android. And Mercury is a company in Nashville that has built native Android and iOS apps for Red Bull, Comcast, TED, The Washington Post, and a lot more brands that you would recognize. And they've been doing it for quite some time. So thanks for meeting with me.
Yeah, happy to. Yeah.
How exactly did Mercury even get into this business of building mobile apps?
So Mercury as a company has been around for about 20 years. They started out in the most odd way. It was a family-run business that started out of the back of another family-run business, which was a Sir Speedy's print shop here in Brentwood.
Okay.
It is the most bizarre thing.
So completely makes sense.
Yeah. So it went from a print shop to a kind of small web business that ran in the back of it. And eventually they saw the writing on the wall that print was kind of going away and that that business wasn't going to be viable as strongly in the future. And they moved towards web. And so the web thing ran for a number of years. And there was an interest in doing desktop software products. And so...
how long ago was that?
That would have been 2006 or 7 or so, when they started doing the desktop software. And so that's... I joined in 2007 or 2008, when we were working on a series of screensaver products for...
I feel like I remember that. I feel like we met a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. So
and that was, and I remember you talking about, there's a screensaver app that we're going to be making. I remember.
Right, yeah. So there were like 12 NFL teams and Sports Illustrated and Golf Magazine and some colleges that signed up to do this. And we did this kind of ad revenue split thing. And it was popular with a certain user base. It was an interesting product because if you were a huge fan of, let's say, the Tennessee Titans here in town, we would get...
I'm only a Fairweather fan.
Yeah,
only
yeah.
Well, like, yes!
Yeah.
Not so much you want to be reminded of them on your screen. Right.
It's not like the olden days where they were winning all the time. You know, it's...
Right.
Like, yeah.
Is that a thing? Did we really win a lot?
Yeah. Okay. Back when McNair was still...
All right. Yeah. Steve McNair. See, I know that. I'm totally up with sports.
You're doing better than I am. So.
Anyway, what would end up happening is that the team photographer would upload all of their photos at the end of each game. So we would get this dump of... We worked with the Packers as well, and they had two team photographers. Most of the teams only had one. They had two team photographers, and we'd get like 2 gigs of photos from those guys after every game. We'd go through and pick the best 15 or 20 photos. We'd clean them up, retouch them, upload them to our service so that when people came in to sit down in front of their computer the next day, either at home or at work, all of these new photos were automatically uploaded and part of their screensaver.
So, which sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was trying to think of what was the name of that Pointcast.
Pointcast, I remember.
Yeah,
Pointcast.
It was kind of like Pointcast in some ways. So we were doing that, and eventually realized that that business wasn't going to work out, and the mobile app stuff came along. Apple had introduced the iPhone, and we were all big fans, and so we actually made a pitch to USA Today to do a screensaver product, and they were like, no, we're not really interested in this.
They're like, guess who I just talked to? The dumbest idea.
No. But in the process of making that pitch, they mentioned to us that they were about to open up a request for proposal for an iPhone application, and they asked us if we did that work as well, and we were like, Yes, we do.
For years, yeah, yes.
Sure.
I absolutely use apps on my phone and could make one.
We have just as much experience as virtually anyone else in the world right now doing this because it was right at the very beginning of it. So they were like, yeah, so put together a proposal and come back to us. And so we came back to Nashville, and Stephen and I, Stephen being the owner of our company.
And Stephen Talent.
Yes. Yep. He and I sat next to one another for like 2 weeks and put together this mock-up that was all smoke and mirrors. And
you can say this now, right? Because like so
much time has passed. Statute of limitations.
You do actually make your own apps, right? It hasn't continued to be smoke and mirrors.
Right.
We managed to move on to the next step where the apps
were. We'll get the outsourcing and we'll find out who you outsource to.
No, I think that you find a lot of times that people have these types of beginnings where you kind of fake it till you make it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely what happened in the very early stages of that. But once we got that project and the USA Today app launched, we took it very seriously. And it launched right before Christmas. So around the same time period in 2009. So that would have been 9 years ago. Yeah. And it was like an instant success for them. So once that took off, we, for a number of years, were just like the news guys. Every news organization contacted us wanting us to build the same thing that we had built for USA Today, which is not really what we want to do, build the same thing, but we did build a lot of news products around that time.
And at that point, the App Store was so early on, there was no one was really trying to make a different product. They just wanted what the competitor had, so the news industry
there was a lot of that. We definitely tried to steer them away from let's do something that fits your brand, that makes sense for you, because you know USA Today is a unique brand within the news space. Sometimes gets poked fun of for being news light. They're definitely a much more visually interesting version of the news than you might find through USA or no. Through New York Times, which, you know, referred to as the Gray Lady. It's, you know, not really, at least not until recently, thought of as being nearly as visual as a product like USA
Today. Right, but New York Times has, they've done a lot of things. I mean, I know from where I spend my time in my career, you know, that's, they've done a lot of things, like you said, visually just on their site, and mm-hmm. whether it be a featured article or how they're taking data and visualizing it and making it interactive and stuff. New York Times is kind of, you call it the Gray Lady. Is that what you said?
That is one of the things they have been referred to it as in the past.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Now, this was also the standpoint 9 years ago. Like a lot of that, the cool visual,
the data visualization stuff, it's grown tremendously.
You know, in that period of time.
Yeah, and even if you step back and look at the mobile apps at that time, like New York Times and the Associated Press were the two most popular news apps in the store when USA Today launched. And New York Times has always kind of led the way when it comes to new technology in the news space. A lot of people in that space will just look and see what is the New York Times doing, and if they react to something, everyone else reacts to it as well. But in this particular instance, New York Times, even though they had an app in the store, it was incredibly slow. It wasn't visually interesting. They had basically taken the very most basic stock thing that you could build and thrown it in the store just so that they could say that they had an app.
Right.
And they were winning by default because no one else had done anything.
It reminds me of early days with my company, because I just had this discussion with a group of people like a week ago. And it was about how if you're one of the first or you're one of the bigger or bigger companies or leaders, then anybody and everybody who's trying to compete with you or get or play in that space mm-hmm. assumes you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
and it was hilarious because I'm telling you, there were several years where everything from pricing to what we would call something, to how we would do marketing or what we do on our website, we'd see it get almost instantaneously copied by sort of maybe like a smaller competitor or even sometimes a bigger competitor. And we would just laugh because we were like, these guys, like, they have no idea that we have no idea. It was just sort of, we don't know what we're doing.
Sure, sure.
And now you're mimicking us not knowing what we're doing, and now you're not, you know, so that's
funny. There's definitely some of that, but there was also some unexpected advantages that we had from our screensaver days, because we had built these products so that they were as light as they could possibly be. When we had to make updates, they did it in a really respectful way, and all of those things translated really well to mobile, which at the very beginning were the hardware was terrible.
Bandwidth was very limited.
The network was really limited. And so the fact that the way all these other apps were working at the time in the news space is, let's say that you have 20 stories and you go to refresh that list of stories. They go and make the request. And if there's the smallest change, let's say that there was a typo in one of the stories and they have to change one word, they have to pull down all 20 stories again.
Yeah, so nothing was efficient.
Nothing was efficient. And the way we were doing it, and we already had this in place from the time that we were doing the screensaver products, is, you know, if there's a one character typo, that's all we're pulling down. We're not having to refresh everything else. So it was just 1,000 times faster right out of the gate.
Yeah. So in some respects, you were ahead of the game.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Even ahead of some of the frameworks or whatever that might have been available back then. Well,
And it even translated to design, because and this predated me, so I'm going on slides that I've seen. But there was a
secret company slides.
Secret company slides
introducing you
to right them. To everyone, right. whoever will listen.
Right.
But like some of the designs I saw for the widgets that were. I don't know if that actually made it into a product or that was conceptual.
It was conceptual pitch stuff only.
Conceptual pitch stuff, but the design was this very narrow display with a ton of data packed into it. And you take that and you overlay that on a phone and it just happens to fit perfectly. So there was already this design initiative to build something that accidentally worked on these phone screens that weren't even out yet when it was conceptualized.
Even though we had started with the screensavers, we started pitching toolbars, which we actually ended up pushing out. So you could basically minimize your screensaver to a toolbar that was ever-present set at the bottom of your screen. And then it was a whole lot more like Pointcast at that point. Mm-hmm. Other than the screensaver and the toolbar, we also mocked up this concept of a sidebar, which, Kelly was saying, was basically the same width of what ended up being a mobile device. So it was a little bit taller than a mobile phone, but the same width. And the lessons we were learning on the design side there translated very well over to mobile once we started working in that space as well.
So you got started by a little bit of faking it till you make it, but you're also good at what you did. I mean, you had the skills to be able to even, we'll just use the word pivot into that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And at that time, nobody, for the most part, was really doing this, was doing it in the capacity that you were doing it. Maybe, I mean, surely there were a handful of other companies. They were probably very expensive and probably in New York. A lot of the times with these things, it's a little bit of luck, you know, it's a little bit of just being in the right place at the right time. Obviously, it worked out really well because of some of the companies I kind of rattled off in the beginning of this. And so now it's late 2018, almost 2019, and there are a lot of developers. There are a lot of tools. There's a lot of software out there. Why would a company want to outsource today to a company like you versus do it in-house? And we can approach it from kind of an enterprise level, because I think most of the customers you have are enterprise level. I mean, like, why are they choosing to outsource instead of do it in-house? Like, what are the benefits, the pros and cons type of thing? And then maybe even answer it from a general perspective.
I think one of the big reasons that, especially, you know, like you're saying, a larger company would do that is it's a resource thing. So yes, they've got, you know, they've got design and they've got development, but they don't have mobile specific design and development. And not all companies, but a lot of companies actually kind of identify that is a very specific skill set. Some don't. Some throw, you know, their web designers and say, okay, go
do all the things.
Go do all the things. And yeah. Then they're web developers. Okay, go do all the things. And where they're working in very, you know, specific buckets of their own, and they might be really interested in doing mobile and have the aptitude to do it. You come to a company like ours, like, okay, well, we've learned all the lessons already. So a company like that can get a very, you know, quality product by going to somebody that's already learned the hard lessons, so they have, you know, already grown with.
Right.
The,
so you can do it. You can do it in-house, but you're almost guaranteed to make a lot of mistakes before you finally get it to where it needs to be. It's what I'm hearing.
If you're transitioning, you know, people that aren't mobile specific,
right.
and then on the flip side, you could bring all those people in-house, but it's really hard to find, you know, good mobile developers and designers. So even if you want to build a department around it, that's not necessarily the easiest task either. So a big company could, you know, that has the money, could just bring all the right people in. That's tough, and especially, you know, selecting the right people, and good people are, you know, they're at a premium right now, on design and development.
Yeah, I think quality developers, we often find, would prefer to work for a company like us that it's maybe a little bit more appealing and interesting than working for a large corporation. Where they are guaranteed to always be working on one thing. So there's, you know, opportunities to explore other verticals and work for other brands and do a larger swatch of products than they might if they were working for a single company.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that has something to do with it as well, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think most developers, they don't want to just clock in, do the work, and then clock out. They want to do something that's very fulfilling and engaging. And you know, there's times where you could be in a product company and you're making updates and you're refining, and that's you know, great, and that can be very rewarding. But the opportunity to be able to jump between different brands and greatly different products, you're just going to be given some new challenges, and you know, designers and developers both, you know, kind of thrive on, you know, give me the challenge so I can defeat it.
So, you know, one of the things that you said was that you might have a team of web developers and then you throw them on this. But I do know, I mean, just because of even who I work for right now, that it is possible to have a team that essentially kind of like they do hire those right people, you know, who specifically know how to do those certain things. And because OTT is so all over the place, I mean, it's so many things now, that I think for them, they find it more streamlined.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're doing all the things. And my guess is that may provide enough variety for the people working there, you know, because you're kind of having to keep up with all the different things. It's kind of how I feel about SEO. It's because everything is changing almost on a daily basis. Sometimes I have to, that keeps my curiosity going. It makes me really interested in what we're doing. And now I have something new to kind of figure out, even though it's technically still the same damn thing. I mean, I'm still trying to get this thing to rank. It's the same thing to rank, but I get to think of different ways to make that happen, to adjust to, you know, what is happening. So yeah, I see it working. I know it works in-house because I've seen it firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that that's probably the typical case. I think the more typical case is the one you were kind of describing, which is most people only have resources for this thing, which is to manage their big website or whatever it might be, and they don't have a sort of cross-platform ability, mm-hmm. you know, within their talent and stuff. So that makes sense. But what about the making things easier? And that means whether it be in-house or they're outsourcing it to somebody, you know, like you, like your company. And by easier, what I mean is, and I've been told not to use the word easy ever when I'm talking to developers or anybody, because they absolutely hate me for it. So what am I doing? I'm using it. And that is using something that is like Flutter that Google just released, or some type of programming app that allows you to write once and then be able to spit it out to Android and spit it out to iOS, as opposed to making individual native apps. Because, you know, from discussions that I've had with Rusty in the past, I'm pretty sure that you as a company practice the native platform app. It is an Android app, period. And if we want to have an iOS app, we're going to write a completely separate app. So explain to me the pros and cons with that.
That's definitely something that we've always done. It is something we're constantly evaluating as well, though. So the way we kind of, you know, got on that was more about the needs of our clients. So a very simple app might be, you know, a perfect use case for a Flutter or, you know, React Native or one of those guys, Xamarin. And as soon as you start kind of getting off the track a little bit from those tools, things start to get a lot more complicated.
What does that mean, getting off the track?
So, Xamarin, Flutter, React Native,
it sounds like you're babbling.
I am.
when you rattle the names of these apps, you're like, Xamarin,
blah, 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 blah.
There's a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
Flutter.
That's kind of what's going on in my head when I try to package them all up in a sentence.
Right,
it's all right. Facebook has two of them, right? They have like React Native, and then there's another one that they have. I forgot what the other one's called.
That's the problem. There's two.
But the point is, if you name them in order, you sound like you're crazy.
Yeah,
so that's the main point. All
right. Or it's like depression drugs or something.
Right.
Taking some Xamarin.
I feel like there should be some kind of disclaimer at the end of this. But the those things are built so that it's really easy to do that, to deploy twice. So there are a lot of those, React Native specifically, you know, it's okay, we're gonna let you write this in a language that you're more familiar with. By you, I mean the random developer just statistically is probably gonna know JavaScript. Might not be as familiar with, you know, Objective-C or Swift or Java, or even more so Kotlin. So they not dumb it down, but they're targeting, you know, the masses of developers. So the first thing is, it's easier to develop for. You don't have to learn a new language if you're a web developer. You probably already have some JavaScript chops. But then what happens is it's having to kind of, emulate's the wrong word, but the tool is having to build things in a lowest common denominator sort of way.
So not many times,
not necessarily
limited,
optimized for the,
maybe,
the platforms.
Or...
They make it really easy to push out something that looks like an Android app and looks like an iOS app without having to do any, you know, specific UI work to enable that, or very little, which is great until you want to do something that's just a little bit different and a little bit more complex from a UI standpoint. Then you end up, or you could end up, in specifically thinking about React right now, is you end up writing iOS and Android specific code anyway.
Because you have to.
Yeah, because you want
to
take it a little bit further. Yeah, you want to take it a little further than what you're given, you know, straight out of the box. Flutter is they've taken a completely different approach where they're writing all that themselves. They're doing the components and they're recreating, and they is Google's recreating the components on the Android side and the iOS side, and it's not even compiling down to Android and iOS code, really, from the UI layer.
When you and I were talking about this recently, you compared it to like Unity.
Yeah, Flutter's more like Unity in the way that it's doing all the drawing.
Does that mean it has its own engine or something, or there's something that runs its own version that it rewrote? I mean, what does that mean?
It's doing all the drawing, so it's painting all the pixels, and just like, you know, you'd use Unity to create a game, and it's painting all the, you know, 3D, 2D, whatever graphics. Flutter's doing that for just, you know, mobile UI, where React Native is going to take your JavaScript code and effectively output two different sets of code that is native Android and is native iOS, where, you know, Flutter's kind of doing this, well, we're just going to do everything. We're going to handle all of it. We're not going to turn it into the native languages. We're just going to render it ourselves.
Sounds ambitious and resource intensive.
It seems very resource intensive. Yeah. If it wasn't Google, I would say it would be just doomed from the start. Okay. Because as soon as Apple comes out and says, well, we've changed the way our buttons look, well, somebody at Google really at that point needs to go and redo all the buttons. Mm-hmm. So that quite a bit of man hours, I would think, that it would take to just keep it up to date. Now, there's the flexibility of it is there. So, you know, Google can say, well, if you guys need something new, you can go write it yourself. But then you start getting into the same problems that you would with React. If everybody's having to go and re-implement things themselves, the shared work that the tool does for you starts becoming less and less.
So you would it be an accurate or a good statement to say if you want to build something simple and you just want it to work in on both operating systems, then one of those sort of like apps that turn it into either one, you know, write once, it does it for two, might be fine. But if you are doing something that, it sounds like, especially with Flutter, that is resource intensive or something like that, you know, that you probably want to write it in a native way. And if you're building an app where you want to have complete flexibility and add whatever feature you want and take advantage of whatever you want, like, I'm thinking of even just the fact that the operating systems have different APIs and things that they provide. And so you may want to, you know, definitely have just an iOS or just an Android native app that you can take advantage of the new thing that just came out.
Mm-hmm.
That you can only do on that version. And why wouldn't you want your end user to enjoy that and stuff? I
think, you know, both could happen. You can. It's probably a little bit easier if you're always developing an Android and then you want to take advantage of Android specific features. You're there. The rest of your app is just just ready for that. I think you can take that approach with Rx or Flutter. You know, babbling names again.
You'll always remember that now.
Yeah, I know. I'll never get past it. I just think it's one of those things that you may not see the headaches that you'll have down the road early on. You may not have any. I mean, to be honest, depending on what the app lifetime looks like,
mm-hmm.
You may not actually have, you know, that problem. I think, like you were saying, a simple get it out there app, that might be a great approach. If you have something that's going to have any lifespan to it, that may bite you.
Rusty looks like he has a sour taste in his mouth.
Well, was it Airbnb that recently they had gone really deep with React Native, and they came back and said, you know, we eventually had to unravel all this and go back to Native. You rarely see people go to these types of solutions. I've never seen or heard anyone go to one of these types of solutions and try to argue that it is the better approach. It is always that it's the cheaper, more efficient approach. A lot of times I think that even when they get sold as this is the cheaper or quicker approach, it's really ultimately, if people are being honest, it's, hey, we're a company that already has an entire house full of web developers over here, and we are really comfortable working with these guys, and we need to find something for them to do. So
it goes back to Kelly's example, of you're in-house and you just want to throw somebody at something to do something you've never done before, so we're going to use this.
Yeah, it's a lower barrier of entry. Yeah,
right.
For that. Well, would you rather give the people that you've already hired work to do, or go and hire more people to do this other specialized thing and have to pay their salaries and manage even more folks? That's a lot of times what it comes down to.
Yeah, I think it is about the reality of a company situation and what they do. I mean, it's that never ending, this is what my goal is, this is what I want to achieve, these are the resources I have, and this is how much I have to spend on it, and you just have to decide, you know, what's acceptable and what's not. And I think it's clear to me from just talking to you right now that if you want the best thing, the best user experience, you want to have the thing that you can continue to build into the future without having to completely switch, then you should probably start from doing it from a native perspective to begin with.
That's assuming you hire people who really know what they're doing.
Because well, that helps, that's,
yeah. Because yeah, well,
otherwise you can have the world's best one-star app.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want anyone to get the impression that you develop things natively and that is going to guarantee success, because you could have a really horrible vision to start with, and regardless of how good or efficient your application is, it's not going to make any difference. You could also hire native, in quote, developers who are not good at what they do, not experienced, and you know, if you're not hiring the right folks to do that work, then you may be better off to hire the React Native, the Xamarin, the blah 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 developers.
And I think the cost thing is very misleading. I think, you know, from a numbers standpoint, we're gonna write this one group or this one person is going to write this app, and then we're going to get two apps out of it. That seems cheaper. I mean, on paper, absolutely. I think the reality of it, and I'm specifically thinking to the case study that Airbnb did when they decided to get away from React, was, okay, well, we're writing this one thing, but now we're having to do all these highly specific things on each platform. So obviously Airbnb didn't put one developer on it, but in that scenario, you've got one developer that came in knowing JavaScript, now has to do a little bit of Swift and a little bit of Kotlin. So that nice barrier of entry, we're like, oh, I know JavaScript, I can write an app. Well, now you have to know three languages.
It's called growth hacking.
Growth hacking.
Okay, it's like the worst term ever.
There are other motivations for people exploring this, though. I mean, the native tools are not great, from what I understand. Like, Kotlin may be better than Java that you guys were using before.
I'm embarrassed you don't know. Okay, yes, Kotlin is way
he's
better.
He's a designer.
I push the pixels. I'm constantly hearing iOS developers complaining about Xcode and, you know, the issues with both Objective-C and Swift. So it's not that any of these things are perfect,
right.
That the native solutions are.
But I think, but they're more flexible.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's choosing JavaScript because it's better than Kotlin or Swift. I don't think that's a motivator, is it's easier to necessarily to work with, especially when it ends up writing Kotlin and Swift in the background, or Java and Swift.
But if you want to, you know, have access to all the features of the platform as soon as they're available, if that's important to you, then it's really the only way to go.
Yeah, you're going to end up in the native bucket anyway.
All right, so last question might be a doozy. Google has been quietly, I guess you might say, just in general, but not quietly in my world of search and SEO and stuff like that, has been pushing for something called a progressive web app, and which we commonly call PWAs.
Okay.
Doing it for years in my world, and it's just now, I think, starting to surface in your world, or it will. And essentially, what it is it's leveraging things like what we call service workers, and which is all, it's like background JavaScript, things that run, always running. And what it does is it makes it so that you can take what was traditionally a web app that where you always have to be online, and it, actually it does several things. It makes it so that it works on something that where somebody might have very low bandwidth. It makes it work offline. The most basic example is literally just saving some content. So if you were on, say, a news site, like the kind of apps you guys have made in the past, maybe now too, it would save articles, or it might pull it down and then you could just read it offline on an airplane or whatever. The more complex versions of these are literally apps. I mean, they're real apps. They even just released one maybe a month or two ago at their developer conference called Squish or something. And
is it another messaging app?
No.
Because Google needs like
no,
one
but it sounds like
app,
it could
right?
be.
They're down to five.
Yeah. Like, can you squish me? I'll get back to you.
please do.
It's like, oh, it's very uncomfortable. It's a image editing app. And it legit works. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is that I don't have to go to the App Store. I don't have to go to Google Play. It's just, I go to the website, and then I can add it to my home screen or whatever, and it's there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's stored. I have this app where I circumvented going through the controlled walled garden, and really just I have this website that now works on my phone without an internet connection. And so I think just what I described right then is the reason why they're pushing for it. I think that they're trying to get away from this walled garden. But it also, because it's a website, technically, still gives them access to all the things that they want and need in order to, you know, serve ads.
Right.
I mean, let's just be realistic here. He thought I was going to say deliver the best app to the user, but what I meant to say was ads.
This is all a play to bring Flash back, right?
Yeah. This is all about Flash. And so I was curious to know, have you considered what that might mean, or even considered even making a progressive web app, and kind of what your thoughts are around that? I mean, do you think that what I just described has the potential to replace a native app, you know, because that means I actually only have to build one thing. It's on the web and is portable in a, you know, a no internet mobile.
Honestly, I've heard very little about progressive web apps in our world. We don't have clients that are requesting those things. They're not really hitting even points of conversation and news sites that we're looking at on a regular basis. So it sounds like something that has potential, but is still new enough that, or in early enough days that it's not high priority right now.
Yeah, I find this absolutely fascinating. Because it's one of those things where I live in my own sort of industry bubble, and this thing has been around for years.
Yeah.
And when I go to conferences, especially when Google has a presence there, it's what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But this
they're not talking about that at Google I.O.
Well, exactly. Well, they did it at their web development conference they just had, but mm-hmm. but it's not. This is what's fascinating to me is I keep talking to people who actually build native apps for the major mobile OSs, and They're like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. What are you talking about? I mean, and I'm just trying to, it's weird to go from, oh my goodness, this is the next big thing and everybody's doing this, to go to the people who are actually making the things that this is supposed to replace, and they have no idea what the hell it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I wonder if it comes down to it's just not as sexy right now for the big companies. So they're, you know, everything we do is driven by, you know, what our clients want and, you know, what they ask for. So if they're not hearing about it, or it's not a hot enough thing, well, they're not gonna dump money into it. So even if it is more practical, which I'm not sure what the trade-offs would be necessarily. If it's not sexy, these companies aren't going to spend the money on it, and they're not going to be focused in on that. So that might be why we don't hear about it in the mobile world. Is mobile and apps are super hot. I mean, having a app icon, very sexy. We like the stores. I mean, everybody wants placement in the stores and promotion. And
I think even though you talk about it as though there's this, the app stores are these walled gardens, which they are, and that there's probably really valid reasons for Google to be evaluating other approaches for people to get products other than through the app store. There are advantages to that store as well. I mean, that you can trust what comes from it. There are advantages to our clients in the fact that if they put together a good application that is compelling to their clients, that is in Google and Apple's best interest as well, and that they will promote those applications. So they assist them in discovery. And that being part of that ecosystem, being within that store, is a good thing for them. On top of that, in you explaining kind of how the progressive web apps are working right now, I know that if you're on desktop and you wanted to save this so that you could use it later, it's not too painful, but in my experience of trying to save a web experience on a mobile device to use in a later date, it's pretty unwieldy and confusing. Even for myself, having used these products for the last 10 years and being immersed in this on a daily basis, it can be a little confusing to like go through all the steps to get this thing on my springboard or homepage or whatever, so that I can access this later. My mom's never going to figure that out. You know, it's just not going to happen. So until the platforms are set up in a way that it's a lot easier for people to get these things and use them in the same way that they would jump into the app store and hit an install button and the things on their phone, it's not going to be as compelling or viable, I don't think.
So would it be an accurate statement to say, at least from what you know and the experience you have, and the fact that I know for sure, Rusty, you go to conferences and stuff, and I know sure. You've gone to the Apple Developer Conference. I assume you go to the conferences, Kelly.
Yep.
That, as far as you know, nobody's talking about this in your world.
And, I'm sure that there are people that are, but it's not with a high enough frequency that it's bubbled up. Hitting
us. That's what I mean. I mean, yeah. As in, like, it's not something that you need to concern yourself with yet. And but the other part is, and this to me is even more important, is that your customers, which in your case, your customers are pretty big.
Yeah.
And I would even say some of them I would consider to be, if anybody's doing it, they're doing it type of customers.
Yeah.
And they're not asking for it. So yeah. That's okay. And then one last layer to that is, it unless it can get to a point where it's as easy or easier to essentially be on this site, because this has to be from your browser. I mean, really.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it becomes obvious and easy and makes sense to the general public that they can somehow add this over to you know, somewhere on their screen, like we were saying, you know, home screen, whatever we want to call it. It has a long way to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that this was Steve Jobs' vision for the iPhone initially. You know, he stood up and tried to pitch everybody that we didn't need an app store, we didn't need native apps, that you could just do all this stuff from the web. And that lasted for 9 months before, or about 9 months before suddenly we had an app store that was ready and going. Kind of, if you kind of look at the behind the scenes, a little bit against his will initially before he came around to it.
Hey, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. It's a great conversation.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having us.